Welcome to the Hockey Show here on 101.5 UMFM, Canada's only campus-produced radio show, Strictly Talking Hockey. Glad to have you along, everybody. If that song doesn't take you back a few years.
I need a 10-hour loop of that.
I know, that is fantastic.
All day.
That song, as you may well recognize, Brass Bonanza, was a fixture in the Hartford hockey scene for the longest time, prior to 1992. Thanks, Brian Burke. We'll talk about that maybe in a little bit. But we have another fixture, another gentleman on the phone today who created a second fixture for at least 1 year.
Right.
I mean, technically, it was only 1 year. I want to bring him in a second here as we get everything going here on the Hockey Show. We have a great interview today with a man who is a professional graphic designer, works with a ton of different education. Institutions, nonprofit organizations, has done a great number of designs for a pile of clients such as the Connecticut Children's Trust Fund, the Connecticut Food Bank, Village for Families and Children. He's been all over the place in terms of a couple different places that he's worked, but perhaps his greatest design ever came for the Hartford Whalers back in 1991 when he introduced the entire world to Wally the Whaler, the only mascot that the Hartford Whalers ever knew. Want to welcome him to the show right now, Mr. Richard Marzi. Rick, can you hear us?
I can. Hi, guys. How are you?
I am good. How's everything going?
Everything's great. And let me tell you something about Brass Bonanza. That is and has been my ringtone. So when you called me earlier...
That's great.
This is the second time I actually heard it.
is fantastic.
It goes off in grocery stores, and people smile, and they said, "Yo, I still love them. You know, yeah. I hope they come back." So don't hold your breath, but
yeah, exactly. That is an awesome little piece of trivia right there, because that song, I mean, is as iconic, I think, to Hartford hockey. Then
it really is.
Like, it's the only. Yeah. Mm-hmm. If there's one thing that people always talk about the Whalers about, I mean, they had great players. They had certainly, a number of, Gordie Howe and all those guys. But I mean, it comes down to, you remember Brass Bonanza?
Oh. Yeah, exactly. Now we have a minor league team, which of course is wearing green and blue, and when they hit a home run, they play that. So it's awesome. So we still get a little taste of there. Jack Say's Brass Bonanza.
There we go. There you go.
We lost, unfortunately. He's no longer with us. The creator of that, the guy who. He passed away. I think last year, something like that.
Oh.
So. You'll have to look that up.
We're gonna have to mark the day on the calendar and hold an anniversary every year I mean, that's fantastic.
Before we get going about Wally, I'll give you a little. I used to wear out. I'm talking wear out. I'm old now, so this is before CDs. My little 45 of the Brass Bonanza. On the other side was a fight between the Whalers when they were the New England Whalers against the Minnesota Fighting Saints. I'm going way back, WHA days.
Yeah.
And it was just, and we would lip sync it, my buddy and I, and we had it, and it was two guys, a color commentator and a play-by-play, and we would take parts, and we would just laugh our butts off and just, and then flip to the other side and play Whalers, theme song. So, yeah, you called the right guy.
That is fantastic, Rick. We are excited to talk to you then, because there's a lot we want to ask, and certainly we'll get to Wally in a second. But let's start with the beginning. Obviously, I mean, you live in Connecticut still in terms of being a hard and fast fan of the Whalers. Did you grow up there? Were you born there?
I haven't moved. I grew up in Harper County in Kensington, Connecticut. And so not too far, about 20 minutes, I'd say, to Hartford. Now I'm closer. I'm actually in West Hartford.
Oh, okay.
Where I have my wife and my son, and we'll go to Hartford Wolfpack games. Not the same, but it's still hockey. It's a fun night out. And, I'm still here. They left, but I'm still here.
That's okay. We still enjoy the fans there in terms of – did you play growing up? Did you play other sports growing up? Were you a hockey –
I played baseball. I was a baseball guy.
Okay.
So, I can't really skate. I know.
That's totally fine.
Listeners are hanging up as we speak up there. But I played deck hockey, if that counts at all, which was kind of like you wear the pads and you just kind of run around a rink without ice. And, it was kind of fun, I guess. I did that for a couple of years. That's as close as I got.
That's fair. I mean, that's not a bad way to start out. And I mean, we were talking before the show there, you were WHA days. You watched the New England Whalers sort of move into town and, establish their presence in Hartford there. And
exactly.
I mean, originally started out in Boston. They were sharing the garden with the Bruins and then moved down the road to you guys. So, I mean, what was it like getting a pro team moving into town there?
Oh, it was terrific. It was, I was young. I was in probably sixth or seventh grade when I went to my first game. But, you know, they were in the WHA, so I got to see Gretzky and some of these guys, you know, and, you know, Gordie Howe came. That was huge. And then when they came to the NHL, that was great. You know, I liked their old logo. I mean, if you want to talk graphic design.
Yeah.
It had a harpoon going through it. And I'm sure we'll get into it later about my design with Wally, how he's holding a stick and not a harpoon because, you know, the activists, I guess, or whoever, the powers that be decided, you know, we got to get rid of that. And then, of course, they became the Hartford Whalers. So a graphic designer named Peter Good, he's very talented. He's done a lot of recognized things in Connecticut, designed, you know, what I consider one of the best logos out there. Was with the H, you know, the negative space. And the W, yeah. So that, you know, that worked out really well. So, you know, they got rid of the harpoon, but they came up with something really, really terrific. So that's still, you see it, and it's awesome to still see it, people wearing it. Even kids, you know, they still, you know, sport their green and blue, and, you know, so it's kind of nice.
Well, I mean, I have a T-shirt at home with the Whalers logo on it, and I mean, I got to say, it gets recognized. Oh, yeah, I mean, don't get me wrong, I'm huge on the hockey history stuff. I love that kind of stuff or whatever. But, I mean, yeah, it gets recognized everywhere. Like, I go out and people are, hey, Whalers, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Just, okay, that's cool. So I
kinda, exactly.
I didn't think it would draw that kind of response, but okay.
I know. Where's my heart? I think we were in Bermuda or something. A guy had a shirt on. And, oh, my God. Look at that. You know? So I think, Adam Sandler had it on in we had a T-shirt.
Yes.
I think Grown Ups, didn't he wear?
Yes, he did,
Something one of the scenes, yeah. So that was kind of cool.
That is cool. I mean, like I said, it's good to see sort of the Whale never sort of faded into the background like some of the teams have, which is good. So
exactly. Yeah.
Looking at the WHA days, and obviously, like you said, you guys got, you know, your fair share of success there with the Howes moving in and certainly, you know, an AVCO Cup here and there in terms of winning.
Yep,
I mean, Winnipeg's Winnipeg's no stranger to that either. We had Bobby
that's
Hull
right,
and
the
hot line in terms of getting on that going.
Right.
Did you get to see any of the AVCO Cup celebration? Were you at the rink when they won?
I was probably too young, but I did see it when up in the Hockey Hall of Fame. I took a trip with a buddy to Toronto, and I have a picture of me standing in front. It's kind of behind glass with a whole bunch of, like, the original Stanley Cup and all these other things. And then, of course, I was with the now, you know, Stanley Cup. But the AVCO, you know, kind of like, oh, there it is.
That's ours.
You know, you used to always have these ads they'd run in their hockey magazines that would say, we won it first, let's win it again. That was their big promotion, you know. So anyway, so it's like, oh, that's what it looks like. So, you know, I never really saw it when it was here. I think I was a little too young. But I started getting into it, I think, their second year of existence in Hartford. And then my father would take me, and you know, the rest is history. I still, you know, followed them all the way to the end. So
I mean, going back to the graphic side, I mean, like you said, you know, the logo with the W on the front and everything like that, the first sort of unofficial, we'll call it unofficial mascot of the Whalers was Pucky the Whale.
Pucky,
that was on the on the sleeve. Fairly innocuous, fairly, you know, lovable little whale that was on the sleeve.
Right.
I find it kind of hard that they never really capitalized. Like, the Whalers never really got into using Pucky as, like, a central figure. Like, I don't know if that's just poor thought on their part, but as a graphic designer, like, wouldn't you want to see that pushed a little bit more?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, they had it. I think that's what was one of the things when they were in the WHA. Yeah, they had it on their sleeves, and it just said ERS at the end. Like, it was, you're supposed to kind of, it was almost like a one of those puzzles on those concentration games.
Yeah,
remember that the Rebus puzzle?
Yeah. The picture and, with the letters,
like, let's see, Fishers. So I don't know if they were just having trouble with that, but then, you know, I don't know how that worked out. I liked it. It was they used to have a gift shop in the Civic Center, which is now the XL Center, and you got to walk through the Whale, and instead of a door, it was that logo, and you walked through the Whale, and you bought your merchandise. And I used to get a kick out of that, and it said Whalers, and that was a lot of fun.
I'm not joking, but I saw that picture, the picture of that logo, of that front, the storefront, yesterday for the first time ever. And that whale door entrance is so cool.
It really was cool. Yeah, and I remember that. Yes, you're bringing back a lot of memories. This is great. I haven't like thought about these things in so long. So this is wonderful that you guys called. So my father, my father, can I have this? Can I have that? You know, poster and all this stuff. But you had to walk through the whale, Pucky.
that is like the cool. Like I said, the first time I've ever seen, because again, nobody really talks about it. It's been gone for right. You know, for so long now, but. That's one of the coolest things I've ever seen. I've never seen the storefront with, like, and again, yeah. I don't know if there's other storefronts. I know that, you know, the Minnesota Wild have theirs built into, like, this lodge and stuff or whatever in terms of building the whole imagery around it. But, I mean, yeah. I've never seen, like, an actual logo used as a doorway.
Yeah, it was neat. I don't know if they got rid of it. When the Civic Center roof collapsed, I think they may have had to do something, like, get rid of it or something. I don't know if it lasted after that. I'm not sure. But I know for a few years there, it was great. It was wonderful. You felt like, okay, I'm at the game. You know, I'm walking through the whale, and then I'm going to get some stuff, a hat or something, stick or something, and then kind of go watch a game. So watch them lose.
Well, I mean, knock on wood, they didn't have very many successful seasons in terms of wins. But, I mean, playoffs weren't out of the question for any year. They seem to be in the mix every single year, so which was good to see. But I mean, obviously the switch from the WHA to the NHL, I mean, kind of gutted the whole franchise. We saw the same thing here in Winnipeg because of the way they sort of just screwed over all the WHA teams by only letting them keep three players. But seemed like Hartford came out of it fairly well in that they. Yeah. Got a pile of players that came back or wanted to at least try, you know, playing in Hartford. What was it like for the first couple of years in the NHL out in Hartford?
Oh, I thought it was fantastic. Now you're in the big time. Now, like, new, you know, ESPN was coming on or cable or whatever, so you got to see them and you recognize faces. You know, there's, you know, Phil Esposito or somebody, you know, and I don't know, maybe he would retire before that. But, you know, and then, you just started seeing players that you had heard about and now they're kind of there and they're in Hartford, like of all places, our little small market. And it was pretty exciting. It was an exciting time. And you just thought they were going to be there forever. And I don't know, we took them for granted and people just, the losing years came on and we just, we'll be here. But then all of a sudden, team gets sold and unfortunately things happen. You guys experienced,
we know where you're coming from. Yeah.
You feel our pain, but you're back, which is great. So we're always keeping our fingers crossed for that to happen here.
I was going to say, it took a little bit for us to get back, but we finally got it back. And
that's awesome.
Now it's a different feeling now than it was prior to. And I think there's a little bit more, I wouldn't call it like just sort of a sentimental appreciation, but certainly there is a this is ours and we're never letting it go now.
Yeah, but
I think if that happened, sure.
There was that surreal feeling of like watching, like exactly what you said, like these players that for so long it was just like a pipe dream seeing them in person, and they're here. Actually, funny story: the first Jets game that I went to when they came back, it was against the Bruins. little connection to the area there, but.
Yeah,
seeing guys like Patrice Bergeron, Zdeno Chara, and Brad Marchand like in person, which was just absolutely surreal. I was like, we're back. Like, this is it. We're here.
Exactly. Yeah, this is the real deal. Yeah. I mean, if they come back, we'd still be, yearning for Ronnie Francis and Al Samuelson and, the legends that were here. Like, wait, that guy's not Ronnie Francis, but at least he's wearing the jersey, the sweater, so...
So I mean, looking at the original sort of logo that was there, and then the switch to the, as you said, the negative space sort of HW that was there with the whale tail, fantastic logo, and I'm certainly one of the most recognizable, I think, across sports whenever anybody sees it, and I know their farm team when they had the farm team sort of set up there with
Binghamton,
right, exactly. Yeah. Then they became the Binghamton Whalers with the flip to the side, which is kind of cool, but. Looking at that logo, I mean, I don't know, again, I don't know if there's a better logo, if there has been a better logo in hockey, simply due to the fact that this incorporates virtually everything about Hartford. It's got the letters and the tail in it, so.
Right, exactly. And that's all you really, I remember as a kid, this is going back to my early beginnings of noticing things, becoming an artist, and then eventually going to art school and stuff, but I noticed yeah, you don't really need to show the whale. The most you go on a whale outing or something on a boat, one of those things, and you see the tail. They come up. You know what I mean? That's basically the logo. That's, you know what I mean? It was kind of clever that he just chose that tail as the top. You know, he didn't need to get it too busy. It was just real simple and clean and symmetrical. And then the green and the blue, I thought, worked really well. And then you would point to people, like, you see the H? And then they'd say, oh, my God, yeah, there it is, you know. They didn't see it at first. And like, there's the H right there. So, you know, I was always a big fan of, like, the negative sort of space that kind of, not to get too artsy on you guys, but
no,
you know,
that's
kind of appearing, you know.
I mean, some of the best logos in the world have that negative space where you go, oh, my God, I didn't even see that. Like the FedEx logo,
yeah, I didn't
for
see
example.
That. Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
FedEx logo has the arrow in it, and it's like, what? I didn't – arrow, what?
I didn't see that. Exactly. The avalanche, like, wait a minute, there's a C in the Colorado avalanche for Colorado. You know, it's going around the A. So,
and I mean, looking at, I mean, you mentioned Peter Good before. Peter Good originally came up with, from what I understand anyway, Peter originally came up with a logo that had that featured a trident on it for the W, and then had the
rejected ones.
And then Howard Baldwin figured out that, oh, I like the W shaped trident because of the H in the middle, and then it kind of things kind of clicked for Peter, and he came back with this sort of new logo. And I mean, the rest is history after that. So,
right, exactly.
I think that some of the. Go ahead. If you're going to say anything about that.
No, I was just going to say, and then when he came up with the tail, I thought that was the perfect solution for the top of that logo. You know, it really worked out. So.
Well, yeah, and I mean, with the fluke, sort of look at the tail in terms of the fluke that the whales do into the water. Like, that is a fantastic. Like, the simplicity plus the complexity that you don't really see is so great in terms of everything that's going on there. Were you okay with the change in colors, though? Because going from green, yellow, and white to green and blue was kind of a whoa, wait a second here.
Yeah, right, exactly. But no, I kind of liked it. It didn't really bother me. I liked when they went to the dark blue. And the green with the silver when they went to the later years.
Yeah.
They changed to the blue pants. I really like those uniforms. I like navy blue. Yankee fan, too. So there you go. UConn and all that stuff. So I kind of like the darker, you know, as long as they kept the green in there somewhere. But, I was always the one when they started adding the silver and they went all around. I think it was easier to keep the same logo because when they went to the green sweaters, they had to use it in white. You know what I mean? Entirely. So he had a white tail with a white W.
Yeah.
You know, and then, yeah, so sometimes they kind of ran into some problems to keep that negative H going. So I think the silver one kind of solved that problem a little bit. So, and they flattened the tail a little bit. It became more like a whale tail than like a fish. It kind of looks like a little, I don't know, like a goldfish.
Yes.
If you look at the two side by side, so... I'm nitpicking.
No, I mean, that's exactly, from a graphics design point of view, that's a fantastic look at that in terms of of the way the Whalers logo is built there. On the ice, comparably to their logo and the success that it's had, on the ice, only three winning seasons in 18 years in the NHL, made the Stanley Cup playoffs in 8 years of the 18 that they played. Only one, and again, Winnipeg will feel this same pain.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Only won one playoff series, earning the Forever 500 moniker, which is kind of awful to say, but that's kind of what happened. But I mean, the winning the one playoff series, I was talking to Jason before the show, and I said every single playoff series that the Whalers went into, though, whether it was against Boston or Montreal, most often, occasionally there was another team in there. But
yeah, they always run into those two.
Legitimately, it was always a 7-game series. Mm-hmm. It was a battle. And I just go,
it was.
Puck bounces one way or the other, and we could be talking about how the Whalers went on this crazy run.
Yeah, exactly. I think Carboneau or somebody said it was the toughest series they had to play. Everybody else was easy on their way to one of the Stanley Cups. It was Hartford. They should have won it all or something. And I thought, you got to say that, really? God, they only got past Montreal.
Just another shot in the dark there.
Yeah.
It's weird. I mean, again, just reading up some of the information that we have here. All time record against the Bruins was not good. 37, 69, and 12.
I've been to a lot of those games.
But always the biggest crowds though in Hartford for those games, obviously because of the region.
The stands, yeah, it was crazy. Yeah, a lot of rivalries. Yeah, the whole Boston New York thing. Rangers would bring in Islanders a little bit. But yeah, Boston was by far sold out, you know, scalpers back when you could scalp.
Right. So, yeah. Way back when.
Way back when.
So for people that don't know a little hockey history here, Whalers, when they first joined the NHL, were playing in the Norris division, which sounds odd because
they were in the Norris. Okay. Yeah. They were always in the Adams, but okay.
We're in the Norris. They were originally in the Whales. Norris somehow moved from the Whales Conference into the Campbell Conference at some point in terms of what went on there. But I mean, they had some good players. Blaine Stoughton was fantastic. Dave Keon,
yeah,
I mean, for Maple Leaf fans would know that name fairly well. Mark Howe, Gordie Howe. I mean, Andre Lacroix was there. I mean, there were a ton of great players. And then again, they went out and they got Bobby Hull at the trade deadline and did really well. But again, it seems like, again, like the Winnipeg curse, we just couldn't get by those either Calgary or Edmonton when it came to winning a playoff series.
Right. I know. Just you ran into a buzzsaw. So I don't know. But they produced a lot of coaches like Joel Quenneville and I think even, you know, Kevin Dineen, some coaching.
They were saying this year that of the guys that played, I think in the 86-87 season with the Whalers, 11 of those guys have gone on to become head coaches.
Yeah, exactly. It's crazy. Yeah, we were talking about that not too long ago. I think Rick Lee may have Larry Plough.
Yeah.
You know, even if it's not on the NHL level, but collegiate or somewhere, they're sprinkled all over the place.
Right, and I mean, that's
all
the thing.
Got a little bit of Whale blood in them, so...
It's weird because, I mean, we look at that 85, 86, 86, 87 sort of seasons when everything sort of came together.
Yep.
I mean, let's make no mistake about it. I mean, Kevin Dineen was there. Ron Francis was there. I mean, they had great, great teams in terms of getting there. Actually won their first playoff series that year against the Quebec Nordiques, which, I mean, who would have thought the Nordiques were first place Nordiques would have been there in terms of getting that going.
Yeah.
Again, 2-1 to the eventual Stanley Cup champions in the final in Game 7 to the Montreal Canadiens. Looking at that season, though, I mean, we're talking about guys like Ron Francis, Ray Ferraro, Dineen, Samuelson, Mike Liut. We're talking about Hall of like Hartford has been littered with Hall of Fame players all throughout their history, and you just go, How did they not get over that hump at one of these points in their career, in their history?
Exactly. I know. It's baffling. And it was a lot of fun. Those were some great years where, you know, it was loud. And I tell my wife grew up in New Hampshire, so she didn't really, you know, great hockey college schools up there and everything, but she didn't really get the gist. She came here just after they left. And so I tell you wouldn't believe it was crowded, it was packed, because now we go to, you know, we'll go to a minor league game and it's not nearly as filled the capacity as it used to be. And I said, just imagine this. I kind of like, all right, squint and pretend there's a lot of people here and brass bands are being played, you know, and you know, I'm younger and, you know, I'm into it. This is what it was like, you know. So to give her an idea, it was fun. It was a lot of fun.
And then 1989 might have been the, I hate to say this way, but it's the only way that's maybe apropos.
Go ahead.
Beginning of the end of the Whalers, in that Eddie Johnston was hired and seemed to trade out everybody who, quote unquote, gave a damn about Hartford hockey.
Yeah, right.
I know that Mike Liut cried when he was traded to the Capitals, which was heartbreaking, I think, for a lot of people because he was a backbone there.
Really.
Yvonne Corvo was the return for that, but what can you do with Peter Sidorkovic and K.K. Whitmore?
God, you're just twisting the knife.
I'm just saying that that's who was left after that trade. So,
yeah, I know. John Cullen for Ron Francis. Are you kidding me? Come on.
Well, again, and that was, I mean, I think that was the one that maybe killed the soul of Hartford because, I mean,
yeah, absolutely.
Trading Francis, Samuelson, and Jennings for Cullen, Zalapsky, and Parker is one of the all-time baffling moves that any GM's ever made.
Yeah, I know. And then what do they go and do? Ron and Opie, they go and win the Stanley Cup in Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, you kidding me? And then, of course, let's fast forward to the Carolina Hurricanes, the former Whalers, going out there and hoisting Lord Stanley. You know, add some more salt in the wound. Now they're winning it in those red and black uniforms. So,
well, and I mean, that's the thing is that you kind of look at this whole run up to what's happening in these different seasons, and you kind of go, like, it seemed like, and again, I'm not saying that Eddie Johnson, I mean, there was lots of guys they had suggested prior to the hiring of Johnson that could have been better GMs and probably by track record, have been better GMs than what Johnson did.
Yeah.
But you just look at some of the guys he traded and you go, what were you thinking?
Like, yeah, exactly. Exactly. Well, he must know something. That's weird. I guess that was the attitude. I guess he knows, you know, but no, he didn't. So,
I don't know.
Baffled.
But that,
yeah, that was the beginning of the end, like you said.
I mean, that Francis trade happened at the trade deadline in 91, and that's kind of where things sort of, I don't want to say fans were revolted, but it sounds like there was some pretty anti-Whaler sentiment in the city at that point. Is that correct?
Yeah, absolutely. Definitely. Especially with Ronnie. Once you left Ronnie, that's like what the Patriots are going through now with Tom Brady. I think they're going to get kind of, you know, sentimental or something, and they might, you know, we won't see as many sweatshirts or something on there in Patriot fans jumping off the bandwagon and all that kind of thing. You can't tell I'm a New York fan at all.
Not at all.
outside the Boston people over. That's when Ronnie went. It was just, and he was such a local icon. He was involved in, you know, fundraising for local charities and things. He met his now wife through some, like, he was a celebrity judge at some Pretty Eyes contest or something, like the whatever these girls, I don't know, kind of like a beauty contest, but just for the eyes or something. Very, you know, PG. And, you know, Ronnie falls in love and he marries a local girl, sticks around, he loves Hartford, then poof, he's gone. And, you know, it's kind of like, how can you do that? You know, that's our captain. That's, you know,
that's trading
Derek Jeter or somebody, you know. It's, you don't do that. Let him stay and fish out and whatever. So he loses a step, you know. Whatever. There's more to it than, you know, John Cullen.
Well,
I don't know.
I mean, and I mean, for everything that happened after that, so Johnson goes into the summer knowing that there's some fairly unhappy fans that might be out there, decided that he needed to maybe make a few changes going into it, as it sounds like not only was attendance in terms of season ticket sales waning in the balance, but Mike needed to buy a little goodwill back from the fans. And that's where you, Rick, you get involved.
Yeah. That's where I get involved. Exactly.
And so let's go through, how did the opportunity come up that the Hartford Whalers were looking for maybe to do this little mascot thing and you got involved?
Yeah. Okay. So one day my mother, listening to a local, WTIC, Hartford radio station.
Okay.
AM radio you put on as you're making breakfast and stuff always. And my mom, God rest her soul, hears this thing. She just kind of catches a piece of it. You know, they're looking for a mascot and whatever. I know nothing. So she kind of calls me and she goes, yeah, I think you got to submit a drawing or something. I don't know. So, all right. So I've been always like sort of a cartoonist growing up, and then eventually kind of, you know, from illustration I sort of switched into a graphic design, went to art school for that, and now, like you said in the lead up to me, was, you know, I've done a lot of sports, not just nonprofit brochures and billboards and menus and blah 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 blah, but I've done a lot of sports things too. Matter of fact, I did, as a bonus, I did the final, I was a designer for a company that we got to do the final Whalers magazines too. Oh. So I have stacks of them up in my attic. There's, like, you know, Sean Burke is on the cover. I remember, I think, the last one, and Jeff Sanderson. I don't know if you remember these guys.
Yeah.
But anyway, going back to that. So I said, all right, I'll draw something. You know, so in about 45 minutes, I drew that thing I sent you earlier today.
Right.
And I said, okay, now I know, you know, the harpoon wouldn't be good, you know, and so I'll just have him holding a hockey stick, and for cutesiness, I'll put like a little worm holding, you know, sitting on a hook, and I'll put a little rod and reel or whatever, a reel on there as a stick, is kind of like a fishing, you know, fishing pole. And then I'll have a pipe, and I know there's no smoking allowed in the Civic Center, so I'll put little bubbles, you know, a bubble pipe.
Sure.
And I'll put them in the traditional, I know it's not the colors, but I'll put them in a very traditional, you know, like the Gloucester fishermen, you know, you see the Gordon's fishermen, you know, I don't know if you guys have those up there. Fish sticks. So I'll put them in the little yellow slicker, you know, and for fun, I'll put a little Connecticut thing on there, or the buttons, or like a pin.
Yeah.
And, you know, okay, off it went. And so they said, you know, I got a letter back. 3 weeks later, says, congratulations, you're one of the finalists, the 40, we have the top 40 or 50 out of 200 and something submitted things, and here are two complimentary tickets to a game on such and such night. And you go in there, and there's all the finalists, and they're all hanging up on the wall before fans go in, just before the entrance. People are kind of putting their ballots. They're looking at them, and I'm kind of eavesdropping, and people really like mine. I think I got a shot at this, you know? And then they whittled it down again to the top 10, and then the same thing. We got tickets to another game, and then I hadn't heard from them in a while. And then I called them and said, whatever happened to that Whalers thing, the contest? And they said, didn't you get a letter? Because everybody got rejected letters. So I'm sorry, but better luck next time, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
And I never got one. They said, ooh, geez. They didn't know what to do. So I was away on a trip with a friend, and my parents called me, and they said, you got a letter from the Whalers. And I said, I'll open it. They said, no, just come home, and, you know, when you get home, we'll open it. So sure enough, I read the first line. I said, congratulations, you've been selected, and my parents were, you know, great. We opened up a bottle of champagne, and it was really awesome.
There you go.
Nice moment. Yeah, and then I got season tickets for the 91 season. I think they won 3 games. I don't even know what it was, but I sat at 41 games, I think. I remember scalping one game I couldn't go to. I got like $2 for a ticket.
I got $2
some guy gave me. Yeah. Yeah, I made a profit. It was $2 I didn't have, but... And then a dinner up in what's called the Coliseum Club, and they kind of overlook the game and stuff in the skybox. And then I was supposed to go on a road game, but that never kind of amounted to anything. I don't know. They ran into red tape about that. They said, oh, sorry, we can't do that. Said, all right, well, whatever. So I think they said you can go to, like, but you have to pay your own transportation, but we'll give you tickets to the game or something.
Yeah, that's,
I don't know.
That's not really a free trip.
Yeah, I'm going to lose those hard-earned $2.
So, I mean, summarizing that story just quickly, a 45-minute design became a mascot for...
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's crazy, isn't it? I just sketched something really fast. And, it was in my head, and then all of a sudden... And the photo I showed you earlier today, I emailed you guys a photo.
Yeah.
That was the first time I'd seen him. I was at, they had like a pep rally type of thing, sort of a, like before the season starts, you go down to the Civic Center and there's no ice. You just kind of walk around on the surface.
Right. It was
and the fans were getting.
Inaugural, I signed with the Whalers party in August. That's the one that Johnson held where they debuted him. Yeah.
Exactly. So he comes out. They didn't tell me or anything. They didn't tell me. It was funny too, because I remember watching the news one night and just sitting there by myself, nobody's home, seeing him eating like spaghetti or something, and all of a sudden Gail King used to be now she's a big shot at CBS.
Yeah.
She was our local anchor woman, and she said, well, the Whalers unveiling a new mascot this year, and all of a sudden there it is on TV. Nobody calls me to tell me. I'm like, oh wow, that's kind of cool. I can share this with my spaghetti, I guess.
You know? Gee, thanks.
And then fast forward again. So we go to that thing, the fan fest, and here he comes. And I've got nobody. I'm just there with a buddy of mine, who, I said, "Geez, you know, there he is." So we kind of went up, and I said, "I created you. I look like a crazy person. Like I get away from me."
Mascot's like, so, listen, creep, don't touch me.
Yeah, exactly. So I called my parents, who weren't far away. And I said, bring your camera, just come down to the Civic Center. And so that's where that photo is taken. My mother is thrilled, like, you know, there he is. He was in my son, you know, 45 minutes, and then here he is. So, you know, I'm not like Walt Disney, who turns, you know, a sketch of a mouse into, you know,
billions, yeah.
Billions of dollars, trillions of dollars. But it was kind of neat to see it come from my head to, you know, 3D and, you know, live living thing. So
I mean, looking at and again, we've got the pictures of, you know, Wally. We're looking at a few. I got a few of them here in terms of what I'm looking at. But I mean, And I'll go to the story that Steve Buckley wrote on The Athletic last year, where Joanne, who now actually has Wally, the costume for Wally.
Okay. I got a story about that too.
Okay, her name is Joanne Cortiza. She has the costume of Wally that she basically keeps, and she said, quote, "I thought it was kind of cute. The only thing was it didn't seem to have anything to do with the whale. I don't know who came up with that. It looked more like the Gorton's fisherman." Do you get that comparison often when people find out that you're Wally's creator?
Yeah, no, not really. But it's been so long that they haven't really said anything, you know. But, and I'm trying to think back to when it first came out. But, yeah, a couple of people would boo in the stands. You know, I'd be sitting there and, you know, my head in my hands. He looks like the Gorton's fisherman. You know, a couple of beers in some of these fans, and, you know, they'll say something. Like, no, I made it. That's like my kid out there, you know. You know, it's kind of weird. But not personal. No, nobody really to my face said anything negative. You know, they just thought it was really cool that I did that. And it kind of gets twisted. Sometimes the story, I turn into Peter Good, and I'm the guy who created the Whalers, the Whalers logo, you know, or I played for the Whalers, or I own them. Like, no, you know, you guys are exaggerating the heck out of this story.
So a couple other comments on there. If you want to hear other comments, Steve Buckley again, this article that he wrote on the it's more about the Hartford Whalers Booster Club, but they were asking about it because Joanne made this thing about, hey, look at, I've got Wally. Mark Anderson was a little more surprised that Wally still existed, actually, saying, quote, quote, "I didn't know Joanne had Wally until today. I'm shocked. I figured that thing would have been burned at the stake a long time ago."
My God, you guys are killing me.
I mean, he went on to add, "The eyes were big and weird." I don't know if that counts for anything.
Well, that's because they really matched my design. I wish they had consulted me. I mean, let alone tell me it's coming on TV or appearing at the FanFest. I wish they would have said, "Hey, Rick, listen, you know, his eyes are, you know, kind of googly." But that's how I drew it. That was my style of as I sketched it, not knowing that, you know, like I said, my mother said, try drawing something, you know. Okay.
I mean, there are worse comments.
Literally.
I was going to say, there are worse comments on this Athletic.
Please.
If you want to hear them, I'll read them, but I'm going to, I would hold off.
I'm still reeling from the fact that the Whalers moved. And you guys,
I know, this is the thing. But this is what I don't get. Like I get that. I mean, I get, like Matt Green's another one of the guys that comments, and he says, "It was awful. Right. The ugliest thing I've ever seen in my life. Having seen it recently up close and personal, it's even uglier."
Right.
"It doesn't seem very cuddly to kids, but I look at this and I go, but there's a kid in that picture and he's standing beside it with a big grin on his face." Like,
that was the best feeling. And I'll tell you what, at the fan fest when kids were hugging that thing, made my heart like just pound a little faster. It was great. Yeah. I mean, there were negatives, but there were little kids running up to it and I thought it was awesome. That was probably the best part of the whole thing.
And I get where you're coming from. Like it, and I'm not going to lie, it does look cartoonish. Mm-hmm. But to me, if I'm a kid, it appeals to me. Like this, a big goofy fisherman. Yeah, like I kind of want
strike
that.
Fear. Yeah, it wasn't. It wasn't like the Flyers mascot.
Yeah, gritty, gritty,
gritty. It's not gritty, so it's not the worst one. Gritty, I think, takes the title on that one.
I mean,
but you know.
I don't understand why people hated it. So, I mean, I guess some of it has to do with the fact that everything that happened in 91 and then they were playing a very terrible 26-41-13 season the following year.
They had to lash out at somebody.
Right.
You know, so,
and it seems like Wally took the heat for a terrible team that was on the ice, which I don't think is fair.
Exactly. Like I said, I think second prize was, you know, two seasons tickets.
Oh, okay.
They only had to go one, so I got first prize.
So, I mean, I look at this and I just go, like, I don't understand why there was so much hate. And again, fans are proud to announce that they hated Wally. And I just go, but there's no reason to hate him. Like,
yeah, exactly.
I mean, so, if they unveiled him in a winning season, I guarantee you the reaction would not have been
anywhere. Absolutely. Remember, well, just like the Brass Bonanza, I think, because it was throughout. If you introduced the Brass Bonanza in those later years for the first time, I think they would have felt the same way. This song is stupid, but I think it was just such a tradition, and it went through the great years and the Evo, you know, World Cup through the WHA, and it was just like it was a thread that kind of lasted, and it's still being played, like I said, at a minor league baseball field, you know, in a city, and, you know, I think the same thing would have happened to that, you know, to Brass Bonanza had it been introduced in a losing season. So I think that's what happened. But if Wally came in, you know, they get to say the, you know, Stanley Cup Finals or something, and while he's throwing pucks into the crowd, I think they would have loved him. I think they would have embraced him. So that's just me.
I don't disagree with that. I think there's I think that just the fact that, you know, this was a terrible time for the franchise in terms of losing your most popular player, you know, sort of falling, you know, tumbling through the standings, and then ending up with another terrible season after that. I think the timing of it was just terrible. And like you said, people kind of focused their anger on the one thing that they could, because who cares? It's a mascot. It's not a real person or anything. So you can't hurt its feelings, but
exactly.
The thing that I was shocked at. Well, the thing that I was shocked at, though, is that after Johnson was fired, he's fired at the end of 1992, at the end of the season in 1992, they hired Brian Burke, and that's when everything, like, Burke just came in and axed this, axed that. I mean, the Brass Bonanza was gone when he took over.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we had to live without that. They had the Foghorn, which makes sense for Whalers, you know, but kind of bring it back,
It's the Brass Bonanza. He changed the color. I mean, he was one of the guys that was responsible for changing the jersey colors from green and white to the navy blue and silver.
Right.
And then
that didn't bother me.
And then they axed, didn't even release a press release. They just axed Wally.
Yeah, he was gone. And now you said the woman still owns it, which is good to hear that he still exists, because I was actually, so going back to, like, I worked for the printing company. I was kind of the in-house art department. And I would do, along with, you know, all these other sports teams, we did the Whalers magazine. And so I was in touch a lot with the front office. So when Wally was going, they asked me if I wanted him. And they said, but you got to come today because everything's getting cleared out. Just come today. And I said, all right. And I couldn't make it. And then I just said, throw it out or whatever, or, you know, whatever, or give it to somebody else. But I was the first offer to own Wally. So he would have been in my closet.
Oh,
you know, yeah.
That would have been the coolest thing.
And I'm kissing myself. For not every Halloween, I would have broken out Wally and walked around. And they could have yelled at me and yelled profanities or something at me and to my face or to Wally's face.
I mean, like, after the team left, they might have just come up to hug you. They might have been like a bit of mourning for everybody.
Yeah, that's true. Exactly. That way, it could have been cool. I could have shown up at, you know, because a lot of people still at the baseball games, they still wear Whalers hats and stuff, like, you know, green and blue, like I said, our double A minor league baseball. And there's still Whalers flavor in there. And that would have been a kind of a cool thing. Like, hey, I got Wally. You want me to walk around, you know, doing something promotional, something, you know, with the costume would have been kind of fun, you know, kind of reaction.
You're just saying, you know, the people are still wearing the hats and everything like that. I mean, Hartford Whalers in 2010 was the biggest selling brand for Mitchell and Ness.
Yeah, isn't that crazy?
And you go, hold on a second here. Like, they haven't existed now for how long? And they're the biggest selling.
Exactly.
And they are. Like, everybody loves it.
Yeah, yeah. You go to our airport, and there's stuff right there at the gift shop. And people are buying stuff. It's great. It's great to see. And you know, I wish there was a team behind it. But it's still nice to see, you know, people. My wife has something. So, like I said, she wasn't even here for the team. But, you know, she's got a sweatshirt. She wears, you know, my son is 15 years old, so he has no idea what this team was, but he's got a shirt. He's got a Ronnie Francis jersey.
Ronnie Francis, nice.
Because of his father.
do you approve, and again, this is probably going to be completely sacrilegious based upon everything you said, but do you approve or do you disapprove of the Carolina Hurricanes wearing the Whalers jerseys to honor their past?
You know what? I'm torn. I really am down the middle. I don't approve. First of all, I don't approve of having them wear the retired jersey. I saw an 11 skating around. I don't know who it was, but, like, you can't wear Kevin and Ian's jersey. Just wear a different jersey that night, you know. So, but it was kind of cool, I have to admit, you know, and to hear Brass Bonanza, to see him skating. I didn't recognize anybody. You know, like I said, there's no Alfie Samuelson or, you know, Pierre Turgeon or anybody. But it was kind of neat. I was kind of torn. It was sad and kind of proud at the same moment. You know, like, when you travel and you say you're from Hartford, and, oh, yeah, the Whalers. You know, we were the Whalers. You know, my in-laws up in New Hampshire, they kind of think of that. You know, you guys had a hockey team down there, you know. So, yeah, you know, good memories, and, you know, I get into the nostalgia. So it was kind of, it's kind of cool to see it, you know, to see that, like, for them to see that that's what it looked like right there. You know, put that game on, because I think one of the games they were playing the Bruins, and they followed the Bruins up there.
Yeah.
So I said, see, that's what it was like, because they didn't know me before, you know. My in-laws didn't, so I told him, you know, put the game on. That's what it was like, you know. Envision me younger and a lot thinner and more hair at a game, and, you know, that's what it was like. So it was pretty cool. So like, yeah, I'm torn. It's kind of sad, but it's kind of proud at the same time. I don't know if that makes sense.
No, I mean, again, we get it, because, I mean, we were always, you know, pretty adamant that if the Coyotes ever decided to wear Jets jerseys, we'd burn the city down.
Right.
But,
But
I mean, looking at you know, how the sort of the I don't want to say, you know, the logo, certainly it's bigger than the logo, but the brand sort of lived on. Like, even in 2015, before, you know, Carolina Hurricanes were under new ownership, under the Tom Dundon ownership, before they started making these reparations to attach to their past, and actually, because Carmanos didn't seem to give a crap about it.
God, he don't show up here.
Right, exactly.
If you want to come back to Hartford, please.
He's the
norm. Safety.
He's Norm Green in Minnesota. Like, we totally get that. So
yeah, absolutely. You can relate. Yep.
But I mean, we look at this and we kind of go, like, even in 2015, like, Reebok said, like, over $1 million of their retail business is dedicated exclusively to Hartford Whalers sales. Like, it's shocking how this brand has lived forever.
Yeah.
Being that they haven't played since 97, so.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know what, we're kind of lovable losers. We never really were, you know, flex our muscles or anything. We weren't these obnoxious, you know, we're a very small market, like the Packers, I guess, you know, Green Bay type comparison. And I think maybe that has something to do with it. It's like, oh, Hartford, you know, how lovable, you know. You know, Katharine Hepburn's from there. Let's do some research in Hartford. We don't have much, but we had that team, and, you know, and Brass Bonanza plays on, I guess, you know, and the green and blue and the whale tail and everything kind of goes with it, out of a little nostalgia or I don't know, a combination of all of the above, I guess.
So being a lifelong Connecticut resident, I mean, and we've gone through this, and I mean, Jason, you were obviously much younger than I was, or you're much younger than I am in terms of when it happened with the Jets, but I mean, I can tell you that when the Jets left, it was like a surreal feeling. Like, you don't actually, that didn't happen. Is that the same sort of reaction you had, Rick, when Carmanos was like, well, we're exploring options?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I knew the writing was there. Well, like you said before, when Ronnie got traded, we saw the writing. I mean, that was like, something's happening, you know, like, and you just felt it. You knew it was happening. And then it made sense. Like, yeah, you know, we're so small and, you know, salaries are going up. How are we going to afford this? And he wanted to build it. He was using for all these excuses too. I remember hearing Pete Carmona say, well, I don't want to compete with UConn basketball. UConn basketball is so tough. It's a basketball sport. I mean, a basketball state. And so where does he go? To Carolina, like right in the heart of, you know, Duke and North Carolina and everything else. So so that was BS. And so we knew he would say stuff like that, you know. I want a new Civic Center built, or a whole new thing. Like, well, you know, he was just looking for any excuse to go, and then they finally went. So we saw the writing on the wall, and there was really nothing they could do. But he tried to rally the troops and go to games to sell them out, but I don't know. Well, combination of
that's the thing, though.
Recognizing,
I think, like, you guys did what you had to do to try and get this to work, but it's like Carmanos kept pulling the rug out from underneath you guys, because you guys were told you had to sell 11,000 season tickets in that 1996-97 year in order for them to even consider staying another year, and he goes ahead and cuts all the packages except for the 41 game full season packages. Mm. Like, he doesn't give you guys an opportunity to sell tickets unless you buy the full package.
Yeah, exactly. Give us a 10-package deal, and we'll go. You know, 5 packages, whatever. So, yeah. Yeah, I think the minute he came to the town, I think that was his goal. Let's grab that team, and let's go somewhere else. And, you know, that was the end. That was, you know.
So, I mean, we had the same thing here. We did a big rally to try and keep the team. And certainly, I mean, it's well. So, again, reading some of these numbers is absolutely staggering. Despite raising season ticket prices by 20%, one day the Save the Whale campaign netted 8,563 season ticket sales in 45 days.
Holy cow. That's pretty good.
Like, you guys were absolutely adamant in keeping him. And that's the thing is that it's almost as if Carmanos was like, no, this doesn't matter what you guys do. I appreciate your effort, but...
Yeah, we could have built him a new stadium or, you know, whatever arena. And I think he still would have gone, you know. We would have been left holding the bag, so...
Unfortunately,
that didn't happen.
Yeah, no, I mean, that didn't happen, of course. But, I mean, that, like, again, I think that that's ridiculous in terms of everything.
Yeah.
Did you go to the last game? Because the last game was pretty big.
I didn't. I couldn't get tickets.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I watched on TV and bawled my eyes out. And I know a few people who had gone, and they stayed right till the end, and they played Brass Bonanza 1,000 times.
Yeah.
And, you know, over and over, and they saluted the fans. Kevin Dineen was our last hero who's still there. And, he was just kind of doing the speech and everything. Thank you, fans. Of course, they lost the game.
No, they won. They won the game.
Oh, they did win.
They beat Tampa Bay 2-1. Kevin Dineen scored the game-winning goal.
Oh, that's right. That's right. They didn't make the playoffs.
No, they did not make the playoffs. That's correct.
Right. Okay. Yeah. I remember. Okay. Because it was a losing, battle. But, yeah. Dude, that's right. That's right.
Yeah, it's just one of those things that I just go, wow. Like, there's, I mean, to go back to those WHA days and, see the powerhouse that was the Whalers at one point to where Carmanos basically just kept pulling the foundation out from underneath you guys. It kind of sucks.
Yeah,
it's
unfortunate. And then there was always that flavor like, well, you can't be serious. They'll come back. I mean, teams come back. You know, you see them, all cities have a second chance. And then, we're still waiting.
That's
true. You guys are fortunate,
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. We say it'll never happen, but you never know. Stranger things have happened,
Last player from the Hartford Whalers playing days that played in the NHL. Do you know who that was?
Oh, I'm going to go with, red hair, defenseman.
He was the last guy to play with the Hartford Carolina franchise, but do you know who the last player was that played in the NHL?
I'm going to pass on that one. Who was it?
You got a shot there, Jay? No?
I have no idea.
Goaltender.
Oh, really?
Jean-Sebastien Giguère was the last active Hartford Whaler player. Still in the NHL, yeah.
Really?
Who retired after the 13-14 season. Glenn Wesley was the last Whaler still active with the Hartford Carolina franchise in terms of playing with
that. That was my guess, Glenn Wesley,
You know who the last player was that was drafted in Carolina / Hartford history? I guess Hartford history, not Carolina history. He played with the team, too.
Okay. Oh, what's his face? Tall guy. He was like a number one pick, I think, wasn't he?
No. Something? Last guy ever drafted. No. Last guy ever drafted didn't play with the team until 2000 when they already moved to Carolina. But I can tell you right now, that man is Craig Adams.
Really?
Craig Adams is the last guy ever drafted by a Whaler. By the Whalers.
No kidding.
Yeah. So there you go. A little history for a little trivia / history in terms of people that were listening and getting everything going.
Yeah.
I got to ask, though, one last sort of thing before we let you get going, because we're almost out of time here.
No problem. Fire away. I'm not going anywhere with this.
No, I know. I know. But you've done a ton of other design work, though, for other major sports teams as well.
I have, Rick? Yeah.
Do you want to run through a little bit of that? Because, I mean, again, it's not like this was like a one-off thing, so.
Yeah, right. Well, I ended up, pursuing my profession, and then, I didn't set out to do sports, even though I'm a huge sports fan, but it kind of worked out that way. One time I got a phone call from a buddy of mine I had gone to art school with, and he heard my name through somebody else. And this was at a time where I was just so down on my luck. I was getting laid off, and, artists are usually the first ones to go, starting artists. For your listeners out there, kids want to become artists. Tell them don't. No, they could. So one day he said, and this was like, God, I was down to, it sounds like a line, but I was literally down to like $50 in my checking account or anything. How am I going to pay my rent and stuff? And I get this phone call in the middle of a snowstorm from this guy who I had interviewed with, but he said, oh, we're not hiring, but I'll pass your name along. I'm like, yeah. And then he gives me my name, and I get a call from my buddy who I used to go to school with, and he goes, hey, Rick, how you been? Blah, blah, blah. And he goes, how would you like to design the New York Yankees yearbook? And I said, are you kidding me? A week later, from a guy with $50, I was in George Steinbrenner's office presenting ideas for the 1995 or 96, sorry, yearbook. This was in 95,
nice.
So I had to get ready for 96. Isn't that crazy? And then from there, so I worked for this company called Finley. They're no longer around, and they would produce all kinds of yearbooks and magazines and programs and stuff. So I got involved in that, and then from there it took off, and, you know, I found myself, you know, a nice strong portfolio again and stuff, and the Whalers were part of it, and, yeah, it was pretty cool.
What was it like meeting George Steinbrenner? Because
I didn't really meet him. I was in his office. I didn't meet him, but he wasn't there. But a lot of the, you know, big shots were there. But it was cool. All the trophies and everything. You open up the blinds, and there's the stadium. And, you know, it was just like George Costanza.
I was going to say, I was picturing a George Costanza-style kind of discussion with George Steinbrenner. That'd be kind of funny.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a little like that. It was kind of cool. And then, yeah, it was neat. That's what I did.
And then you do, I mean, obviously, we'll give you a little chance to promote your work as well, because you do a ton of work for a bunch of nonprofits and educational.
I do,
again,
yeah, yeah.
I mean,
colleges
that's,
and things like that.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of the sort of the, you know, the greater good, if we can say that, in terms of, you know, the nonprofits are a big part of everybody, every community. So if you want to promote a little, you know, some of those companies, by all means, give them a shout out.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I do a lot of work now for a place for, they're finding, homes for homeless people called Journey Home. That's my big one now. And I do a lot of stuff for the UConn School of Law. That's not a nonprofit, but it keeps me busy, except these past couple weeks. There's no more classes.
Yeah, I know that.
So, unfortunately.
Yeah.
So I'm doing a lot of dog walking these days and a lot of Xbox.
That's okay. But, as long as you get a chance to play as the Whalers, right? I mean,
yeah, well, of course. Exactly.
That is awesome. I'm going to say right now, Rick, I mean, this has been a fantastic chat. I mean, we could probably go another hour in terms of talking about everything about the Whalers, but I mean...
Oh, it'd be awesome.
I mean, we'll gladly have you back if you want to come back in the future, for
sure. I would love that. This has been a blast.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I liked going down memory lane with you guys, so it's kind of cool.
I mean, it's super cool to hear about Wally as well, because like I said, we had no idea. I had no idea until I sort of... just stumbled across it, and then I thought, I mean, like I said, I was doing a little digging, and all of a sudden there was, I was like, who's this resume? I created him. What is this? This can't be right, can it?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, it's cool to get in touch with a guy who basically has a small piece of hockey history. Yep. That's kind of cool.
Yep, from my brain down my arm into the pen and then into the mailbox.
Into the Civic Center at that point. So.
Into the Civic Center, yeah, exactly.
That is awesome. Rick, we want to thank you for your time tonight. I cannot say thank you enough for that because, again,
my pleasure,
you could have just said, no, I don't want to do that. But, again, we really appreciate you telling the story about Wally the Whaler because I don't know if anybody would have it anywhere else. So.
Yeah, this is it. You found me. I appreciate that.
I am happy to have found you. Enjoy the dog walking. Hopefully there's some graphic design work coming up for you. But by all means, the door is going to always be open for you here for sure.
Okay. Sounds great.
Awesome. Thanks, Rick.
Thanks, guys.
Okay. Have a great night.
All right. You too. Take care.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
So there is Rick Marzi, who is a phenomenal, phenomenal designer in terms of his setup there. Happy to have spoken to him, and certainly an amazing story of his longtime Whalers fanship.
Yeah, and it's crazy to hearing about that the last game and the last kind of gasps of that team, because that's exactly what happened here in Winnipeg. It was this concerted effort to keep the team there, but it's just every corner you turned, a door is slammed in your face. So it feels like this is a market where, and you talked about the numbers, like something has to be there, right?
Right. Like, there, it's a void literally on the map right now in that there isn't an NHL team there, considering how passionate those fans are.
We've got Seattle coming. Houston is still on the horizon. People are still talking about it.
Quebec City's still in the mix.
Like, why are we not giving, you know, we gave Colorado a second chance. It worked out. We gave Winnipeg a second chance. It worked out. Atlanta didn't really work out.
No, it didn't work out.
We're giving Seattle the shot that they never got.
Right.
In terms of getting an expansion franchise and having it taken away. And then...
I mean, we've given places that maybe shouldn't. Florida, in terms of, you know, Miami, sort of that south area.
Arizona.
Who would have known Arizona exactly? San Jose, who would have thought they would be a hockey market that they are? Like
all of California.
Like, I mean, this is a chance where... And I know that, you know, it's big business and you got to get, a millionaire, billionaire in there in terms of being able to pay for stuff. But I'm sure there's somebody that has Hartford roots that goes, I want to do that. Yeah. I want to do that. That sounds fun. Yeah.
Yeah.
So let's hope that that happens. We'll see if that goes on. We got to get out of here right away as Free Range Radio is going to start in moments here on 101.5 UMFM. I do want to alert everybody, though. Next week, we're going to sit down with another fantastic person. You may not know her name. You should know her name if we've talked about her enough on here about just how much we hate her because she's so good. But we are proud. We are honored to sit down for an hour with Autumn McDougall of the Alberta Pandas. She finished her fifth year this year. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, didn't get a chance to play for that national championship. We'll talk to her a little bit about that next week, as well as the amazing stats she put up, including one team that she legitimately thrashed her entire career, not named Manitoba, thankfully. But she absolutely just pummeled one team in particular. So we'll talk all about that next week with Autumn McDougall. We're happy to have her on the show. Jay, your time at the Manitoban is done. So
yep.
Anything to promote that's coming out for the last edition here?
Well, we have the April Fool's issue in a couple weeks. Next week, it's going to be a lot still more COVID-19 fallout, talking to players
Yay.
About canceled things and all that. So keep an eye out for that. We've got a few weeks left before I'm off to the wilds of having a full-time job.
There you go. We'll make sure that we make every effort to catch up with those stories as well. Obviously, if you're out there and you're going outside or you have to do anything, be safe, be
wash
smart.
Your hands.
Wash your hands. Keep your distance from people. But overall, just be safe in terms of the decisions you make, folks. With that, we are out of here for another week here on The Hockey Show on 101.5 UMFM. Here's a little Brass Bonanza to take you out.